انا اللي واقف واللي ماسك اللي قاعد واللي سايب انا المفكر الحيوان انا.
I'm Christopher Lydon in a cafe conversation in downtown Cairo. The thread is the culture of fear and cynicism and despair that infested and stifled Egypt for 30 years or more. And even now, it hovers over the transformative miracle, the heavenly gift, as they call it, of Tahrir Square. This is Open Source, an American conversation with global attitude, we call it. Call this one, Three Guys Walk Into a Bar in Cairo. Actually, we're in Grappi's, one of the faded old Swiss tea rooms in the rundown but bustling heart of the city, what people call the lost European dream of Cairo. The three 20-something intellectuals I'm sitting with are nursing their own endangered dreams of revolution. So what if the Muslim Brotherhood and Mohamed Morsi hold the government for now? I wanted to hear more about the shifts of emotional ground that may run deeper than politics. Or maybe not. How was it, I began, that all of Egypt got snared for so long in a web of torture, abuse, and terrific fear? Ali Al-Ragal jumped at the bait. He's a political sociologist and activist from Alexandria.
I think it's very important to speak about fear. Fear is a very important keyword. I think that Egypt was and still is what we would call a very securitized society on different levels, and this is what makes things very complex. You have different levels where fear is playing its important role in the way how the individuals act in the public sphere, for example, the way how they deal and raise up their children, the way how they interact with the society, with the state institutions, with the power relations within the society, generally speaking, outside the state. Like, how do you deal with the capitalists who are controlling the economic system and the means of production and so on. So here you have fear playing different role on different level. At the end, they succeeded to the system succeeded to form a kind of securitized society as well as a securitized system, and the state is definitely securitized in Egypt since 1952.
What two questions? What broke the culture of fear in Tahrir Square, and why does it in many ways persist, as you're saying, both in the enforcement by police and also in the minds of many, many people?
Amr. What broke the culture of fear in Tahrir Square? Let me try to reframe the question a little bit.
This is Amr Abdal Rahman, who calls himself another miserable graduate student finishing his dissertation on politics.
It was not only about fear. It was about fear, cynicism, and despair. That what was exactly dominating Egypt before the revolution. So in some quarters of the city, you would fear the police. But in general, what was dominating was that feel that nothing worth. Exactly nothing worth. And that feel about cynicism and the lack of solidarity. Complete lack of solidarity. So if there was a kind of a culture of fear, it was actually the fear from each other more than fearing the police, more than fearing the state. The fear that the moments that something would erupt, that something would break down, that a revolution would start, this would be the moment of the total collapse. This would be the moment of our worst nightmare to appear. Worst nightmare associated with crimes, associated with the disorder, associated with the lack of the system, and everything. What broke the culture of fear in Tahrir Square is that there was all of a sudden an opportunity that another life, another kind of a collective is possible. So it was not kind of a heroic moment. It is not a kind of a revelation moment. It was not because at the beginning of our warming up discussion, you said something about a miracle. Well, it is a miracle in some sense that all of a sudden there was that glimpse from the future, that there is a new collectivity possible. So you have seen, it's as if you have seen the future revealing itself in Tahrir Square. And once you see that, there's something that you can pit on, something they can identify with, a model that you can show to the people, saying that here in Tahrir Square, there is a vision from a country that's possible. there is a vision of a world or of a country that we can all win if you come to Tahrir Square. So here, I mean, like what provoked the culture of fear is that also, that the absence of that sense of cynicism, that no, there's something that we're solidarity with. There's something that we're working for. So it's not the victimization of the people. It's not the heroism of the people. Actually, it's something that's much more simple. That now there is a place in the city whereby something different is unfolding, and it's worth fighting for. Definitely, the change has been very, very little since the 25th of January. Very, very limited and confined to certain areas. But there's something for sure that we can tell people, that we have Tahrir Square behind us. It's in the back of everybody's mind. That moment is in the back of everybody's mind, and nobody would be able to exclude it from the public memory. That it is our yes we can if we can put it this way. Yeah, exactly. So for example, now because the new system is also again manipulating that sense of cynicism, that sense of despair, that sense of fear. But now we can confidently say, well, fine, guys, you did it before.
Yeah, it is possible.
So I mean, what Tahrir Square did is that it opened up the horizon for new possibilities to arise. So for example, today, I mean, if you are 16 years old, if you are a teenager, and you would like to embark on a rebellious action against the figure of the authority in the family, the patriarchal figure of the authority in the family, you go to Tahrir Square, you start clashing and engaging the police in some clashes, or you engage with the ultras, the football leagues. So now there's a possibility. There's a possibility to act differently.
Here comes Fuad Halbouni, an Egyptian anthropologist at work on his PhD at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore.
The whole issue is that when I was mentioning the culture of fear, I was talking much more about what's happening after the revolution. That there is, if anything would last out of that revolutionary spark that happened in Tahrir, would be a different relationship between the people of Egypt and the state in many different ways. In other words, that all of a sudden something has, the security apparatus has received a very strong blow up to a particular point where, you know, the Muslim Brotherhood has been in many ways trying to resurrect it. They still want to resurrect something out of the security apparatus, out of, you know, out of a particular political agenda or whatever. But what I'm trying to say is that, look at, if you go now to Muhammad Mahmoud Street, all of a sudden something, the might of the state, or what we call the dignity of the state, you know, that we always have to protect, something called this dignity of the state. And that's why the rule of the law always has to take a certain kind of brutal force or blindness that you have to enforce upon people, no wonder what, you know. This has been particularly broken with the people. Up to a certain point where, you know, it actually makes the state appear as very weak, such as they would use that discourse of might and the state dignity about the graffiti. So when you had, at a certain moment in a month ago, you had the state wanting to erase the graffiti in Muhammad Mahmoud Street, for instance. And they wanted to put like trucks, you know, to guard after they would erase and repaint the walls, that no one would draw again. So what kind of state would have all those sort of trucks fearing this question about a graffiti painter, for instance? And all of a sudden something about the relation of the state with the people has been broken. They are always performing this acts of might or acts of, you know, state brutality, but they know that they are so weak that they have to reaffirm it over very minuscule practices such as the graffiti. And all of a sudden, you know, what happened is that the graffiti artist went back amid the, you know, while the trucks were there, and they've repainted the wall. This could be a very small gesture, but it shows that something is monumental, a change that's coming its way between the state and Egypt. We have begun a new chapter.
I want to mention the flip side of this Tahrir effect, and I felt it during the whole siege of Gaza. And, you know, more than 100 civilians died there under the Israeli shelling. And I felt among the Egyptians we were talking to a kind of, not culture of fear exactly, but more the cynicism and despair, Amr, that you were talking about.
The revolution was kind of an occasion for many people to transcend their own destinies.
This is Amr again from Alexandria.
I mean, everybody now can have something through the revolution. Everybody now can gain something in his own personal life through identifying with what's happening, or through participating, or through at least declaring loyalty to the Tahrir crowds. Like we're behaving differently. We're having different relations to our own bodies, relations between men and women. We're being transformed significantly in the place. The class divide was absolutely once and for all. For the first time, I see a place in Egypt that is a rigidly class society that is really, really transcending the class divides. This is a very, very interesting decade. I mean, first of all, the state ceased to have any kind of an ideological mission. Yeah, I mean, like since its own inception, the modern state has always had kind of an ideological mission. It was preaching with something. It was preaching with modernity at the very beginning, with Muhammad Ali, and then preaching with independence, then preaching with independence and many different things like socialism, then preaching with progress, then preaching with welfare and peace after the Camp David Accords with Sadat, and then there was something. A deadlock by the end of the 90s. That first of all, the world system that we're living in is not offering us any opportunity to preach. It is a system. It's a system of a securitized neoliberal economy. I mean, now actually, the state was ordered globally by the IMF or even by states like the United States to withdraw, to minimize, to cut down. To trim its own weights and not to preach anything. So actually something about the brutality of the security, it is something that's definitely locally grown, but it's also affected and impacted by global transformation.
Yeah. In which the Iraq war becomes a sort of model. Or does it?
Yeah.
I mean, was the Iraq war in that sense a model of something?
I would say that by the end of the 90s and or even earlier, I mean after the collapse of the Soviet Union, I mean you have all these security apparatuses are not facing the Soviet Union; they're actually facing some kind of internal dissonance. Hmm. Yeah. So the figure of the enemy is not the enemy at the gates; it's the enemy within. Hmm. It is always the enemy within. It is the terrorist. It is the antisocial. It is the anarchist. It is the anti-system. It is the criminal. It is whatever. So all the kind of the military operations, they are no longer kind of military operations to face kind of an army that is coming, that's a Soviet army, that's whatever. It's actually a military operation to police internal dissent. The operation in Iraq, actually the military operation against Saddam Hussein army, it continued for a couple of weeks. And then you have kind of 2 years of the Marines policing the situation in Iraq. And when you see policing the situation in Iraq means that facing smuggling of arms, facing smuggling of drugs, facing human trafficking, facing Islamic terrorism, facing Shiism, Shiist terrorism, facing a very, very wide range of practices that needs to be policed. And actually, that was a role model for the police in Egypt. So the brutality of the police in Egypt in the popular quarters of Cairo in particular, it is not only to defend the authoritarian character of the regime, that's true, but also to defend new economic policies, to defend new economic situation, to defend a new reality of social segregation. So for example, I mean, when you see the map of Cairo, any kind of a shanty town, it's actually developed in order to cater and serve a new gated community, a new compound. Yeah. So what's described as a slums, what's described as random expansion, it's actually random in the sense that it's deeply related to something that's organized and designed, and it needs to work on. So I mean, the police role here was to keep the line between the formal and the informal, to keep the dividing line between the domain of the modern and the domain of the barbarous, the savage, the ultra modern, the extremist, da 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 da. So. Erosion of the ideological policy on one hand, and at the same time, inflation and expansion of the security processes. Yep. So you have here governance through security, governance through brutality, not through ideologies. That's why you have a new generation that's completely alienated from the states, completely disenchanted about any big promises of anti-colonialism. Why on earth shall I believe that Mubarak is actually standing against the Americans? Why on earth shall I give shall I buy into the ideological propaganda about the dignity of the Egyptians if I'm seeing with my eyes that the dignity of the plain Egyptian is being severed in everyday's carrying. So this sense of disenchantment of this despair actually has been transformed into a revolutionary force. Because I mean once you are pouring into the streets, I mean you're seeing the security exactly as an occupation force. It is an occupation force. You have no links with that. I mean this state for you, it does not represent anything. You have no affinity with that state apparatus at all. So that's why people we're pouring in the street with that remarkable courage that this is a deadlock. Something needs to happen. We don't know what it is, but then we got that gift, that heavenly gift that's called Tahrir Square, 5 kilometers. We don't know exactly what we want to do, but we'll try to figure it out in that space. And this is exactly what happens.
And then Fuad again, the anthropologist.
This space of Tahrir where you really had to let the space, despite that you were under attack from every side in the streets, you had to keep that 5 kilometers open to people from everywhere to show that there is another world possible. You had a kindergarten, you had more or less of a microorganism, you know, like a kindergarten, people who are in word of service to tell you that we can offer you something of an alternative to the space outside Tahrir Square. Despite that, you know, where you were attacked from every... Sometimes at night you would be attacked by the police from every... Or thugs from every corner. But you had to find an alternative under exceptional cases. You know? And that's what I found. What is... What lasts out of a revolution? What remains? You know? What kind of is... I think is missing from the ways that the politicians are thinking in many ways is that something has been broken. Like we're saying, it is not a huge bureaucratic institution that you are mainly inheriting. Something has broken down in the relationship between society and the state itself. And in that sense, you have a lot of like microscopic, you know, a vast array of strikes, people surrounding a police station because someone has been beaten. You know, that is very important. So standing against, you know, police brutality, the relations between men and women and everything, that there, it's a kind of a sort of way that it's as if you are trying to stand against oppression in society itself on a societal level. More or less of an horizontal level, more or less. And that is what I see, something that the state or those that are in power would never see. That's why they remain very blind, such as the prime minister or whatsoever, is that they are thinking in a very, maybe we can say, old-fashioned manner, you know? And this is what we are hoping, that this kind of change, which changes the very relation between the state and people in Egypt, could do something about brutality in everyday life. You know, that it could change something about this kind of texture of everyday life. This is what we're much more hoping about. And maybe on the long run, it would definitely affect the Egyptian state in a social, or decentralize it completely in that sense.
There's a dread among these revolutionaries in Cairo. And it's reflected in the Western news coverage, too. It's the idea that the heavenly gift of Tahrir Square might have run out. In the political slog forward, I asked my three guys, is the conversation still moving that keeps the dream alive?
I think it is moving, but it is in a state of a little bit of a stagnation. And now there is a very insistent question on us. How are we going to march forward in this path of emancipation? What is needed more than this? Now there is a clear problem with the society, within the society itself. How we would convince many other sectors of the society to push forward, which is very a difficult question now, because a lot of people are emphasizing stability again too much. And the same tactics, same methodologies, we are rethinking them.
Actually, things are... The revolution is still continuing in some kind of form, and that's what gives me hope. I, I, actually things are not clear, and that's what actually makes me more hopeful. Maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm too naive, but we'll see.
Thanks to our three guys in the cafe, Ali Al-Ragal, Fuad Halbouni, and Omar Abdel Rahman. Mark Fonseca Rondero recorded and edited our conversation with help from Mary McGrath. It's not over till listeners like you feedback with comments on our website, radioopensource.org. I'm Christopher Lighton. Thank you for being part of the project. أنا الراجل اللي بشنا بالي نفسه عالسرير يا رئيس الجمهورية سلطتك منتهية أنا كارتك اللي اتحرق وأنا ريحتك اللي فاحت وأنا اللي كنت زيك فاسد لما كنت ساكن أنا الشحات العدمان الفقران الشمتان أنا الزاهد الكادح العالم السارح أنا لا مبالاة مادة الدنيا والحياة أنا الاستبداد حب التملك والهواء أنا ماضيك المريض مستقبلك اللي تهان أنا المصطلح الجديد اللي اتعلمته عشان تبان أنا اللي تلت عشان أعيش يوم ما يتقالك مفيش أنا العامل اللي جاع أنا الوقت أقوى سلاح